From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Kobe Bryant is going to stand trial for rape in Colorado. But even before a trial date has been set, his accuser, a 19-year-old woman, has reportedly received hundreds of death threats. She's had to move four times. Yesterday, she was required to testify in court for hours in a closed pretrial hearing to determine what evidence will be admissible at the trial itself. Reporters were not allowed in, but Kobe Bryant was. Among the topics discussed, the underwear she wore to her rape exam and a detailed exploration of her sexual history. Among others testifying, her ex-boyfriend and ex-roommate. Critics argue that this is the kind of invasive probing of a woman's pre-rape sex life that rape shield laws enacted in 49 states in the 1970s were supposed to prevent. Defenders respond that this may be what it takes to keep an innocent man from going to jail, and that this is a perfectly legal line of questioning. We begin tonight in Eagle, Colorado, at the courthouse where Denver Post reporter Steve Lipscher has been following the events of these past 2 days. Steve, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome, Tom.
Steve, I know that reporters have not been allowed into this pretrial hearing, but as far as you can tell, what has been the subject? What has been discussed?
Well, we know that the topics of discussion were the rape shield issues, as well as some suppression issues about some statements that Kobe Bryant made to investigators early in the investigation. But the meat of the closed-door hearings have been the exploration of the woman's sexual history and the defense efforts to prove that they are relevant to this case.
Steve, very quickly, remind us of the basics of this case. It was the end of last June when superstar Kobe Bryant checked into this hotel in Colorado, and then what happened?
Well, he met a clerk at the hotel, and the two of them, after a tour, engaged in some mutual flirting and making out, and one thing led to another, and at some point they had sex. The obvious question and debate that's going on, the whole root of this case is, was it consensual, as Kobe Bryant asserts, or was it forced sexual assault, as the prosecution in this case asserts?
And why is it, Steve, that all these months later there is still no trial date set?
Well, it's an interesting tactic that the courts have used here. In Colorado, just as in every other state in the union, there are speedy trial provisions, and they kick in as soon as a defendant enters a plea. Essentially, if Kobe Bryant were to stand up and say, Your Honor, I'm not guilty, that starts a six-month clock ticking, during which time he has to have a trial.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they've gotten around this, both the prosecutors and the defense have agreed to follow the judge's protocol, his preferred protocol in this case, and that is to slow things down. We'll take care of all of the pretrial motions ahead of time, and then, and only then, will we have the defendant enter a plea and start that clock ticking.
How has it come to pass, Steve, that there is so much information, including the name of this accuser, out in the public domain?
Well, that's the result of a zealous press corps that have been trying to track down information about this case and about this woman, and a very zealous defense team. This is a team that has managed to uncover a lot of somewhat speculative evidence that and they've made a lot of public filings about it that have fueled, again, people like me who then write about what the latest court filings say.
And how has that happened? How have they introduced information or even speculation about her sexual history or sexual activity into the case even before the trial's begun, in spite of the rape shield law?
Well, this is, again, an interesting little tactic that's going on here, but they have found a way to when they argue, that they want to have the DNA tests, the results of the DNA tests from the prosecution, and they also want all of the materials that the DNA, that the prosecution tested, so that they can conduct their own tests. Well, that'd be well and fine if they mentioned it in just such generic terms, but what happens all too often is, the defense in particular will say, we want the DNA evidence from the yellow panties. And then they make arguments that the prosecution hasn't turned over the crotch of the yellow panties, and then they say what they expect to find. Because through the course of the legal process of discovery, the defense has learned that that another man's semen was found inside the panties, for instance.
And then there was the day last October when Kobe Bryant's attorney, Pamela Mackey, dropped this kind of bombshell question at the end of a day of testimony whether the accuser's injuries, vaginal injuries, could be consistent with someone, she said, who had had sex with three different men in 3 days, loaded with suggestion right there.
Absolutely. And what she has done is viewed the evidence that she knows is in discovery in a light most favorable to her client. Obviously, that's what a defense attorney is supposed to do. And she has made some inferences and some jumps that may not bear out, but are possible. And that's how she has been able to legitimately raise these questions.
Steve, the mother of the accuser has written to the judge in this case pleading that the pace of the trial be speeded up. Why? What's she saying in this letter?
This is a very compelling letter that was just filed today on behalf of the accuser in this case. They're asking the judge to speed up the case because she's just been subjected to harassment, to tracking, to stalking, in effect, by members of the defense team and by members of the media.
The mother says she's received literally hundreds of phone calls and emails threatening death and mutilation. And I see here three different men have actually been arrested for making death threats to the accuser of Kobe Bryant.
That's exactly right. I have no doubt that this this letter is that there is not going to be disputed. These things probably have happened to this woman because she's raised very incriminating allegations against a very popular athlete. It's interesting, you know, they talked about in the letter, talked about how yesterday after testifying, this young woman went out with some friends for dinner and were confronted by a man with a camera there. Who would not leave them alone until she finally picked up her cell phone and called for help.
Better a camera than a death threat and all the moving around to stay away from it. But it can't be fun in some very large sense. It sounds like this young woman is not shielded.
That's, yes. You know, the legal rape shield law still seems to be in play here. I mean, we don't know what's been going on behind these closed doors for the past 2 days. We don't know the specific sordid details about her sex life, which was the topic of yesterday's testimony from this woman. So legally, yes, we don't know that. But in the court of public opinion, obviously, there's a lot of things that are known about this woman that advocates of victims of sexual assault would prefer not come out, at least not now. Wait until it happens at trial.
Steve Lipshire, thanks very much for joining us.
You're very welcome.
Steve Lipshire joined us from Eagle, Colorado, where he's been covering the Kobe Bryant case. He's a reporter for The Washington Post. We are talking tonight about rape shield laws, women's privacy, and the Kobe Bryant case. Are the country's rape shield laws working? Is an accuser's sexual history ever relevant? And if so, when? If Kobe Bryant's sexual history is fair game, why not the accuser's? And can Kobe Bryant and other accused rapists get a fair trial without access to an accuser's sexual history? Will even fewer women come forward if they suspect every intimate moment of their sexual history will be scrutinized in a rape trial? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now in Boston is Wendy Murphy, a former prosecutor of sex crimes who now teaches at the New England School of Law. Good evening and welcome, Wendy Murphy.
Good evening. It's great to be here.
It's wonderful to have you. Thanks so much for joining us. Also joining me from Denver, Colorado tonight is Larry Posner, a defense attorney and the former president of the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. Good evening and welcome, Larry Posner.
Hi, Tom. Welcome to you, and I hope I can be of use to you in this conversation.
Well, it's good to have you with us. We want to explore what's going on here in the Kobe Bryant case and more broadly. Wendy Murphy, you have been quoted quite critically on the subject of the rape shield law and what is happening with it in this case and more broadly. How do you see what's going on here?
Well, you know, I understand and appreciate the intent of the Rape Shield Law and the very good intentions of those who fought so hard to get them enacted 30 years ago. And the reason they were enacted is a good one. Before Shield laws were in place, judges were regularly allowing defense attorneys to bring up a woman's sexual history in a rape trial for the purpose of suggesting that because she's promiscuous, she must have consented on the night in question. Obviously, that's both illogical and unfair. It's rooted in sexism and inequality. So women went to the legislature and said, why don't you build some kind of law that will prevent this? And Shield laws basically said, look, all people have a right, a constitutional right to sexual freedom and autonomy. Which means that whether you're a nun or a prostitute, it doesn't matter what you do in your consensual sex life. Yeah. That cannot be used against you if you have the misfortune of becoming a crime victim. Because if it were otherwise, then you may as well be declaring open season on certain types of people. Well, to respect that idea, those deeply held fundamental constitutional principles, we passed laws that said, judges, you have to stop doing this. It's not right. It's not relevant. It has nothing to do with the truth of what happened on the night in question. And in all states at this point, we have these kinds of Shield laws. The problem is they were designed to protect principles of privacy and autonomy, but because they became statutes, we forgot that in fact what we were promoting was underlying constitutional basic principles of freedom. So we, in a sense, debased the goal. We debased the interest. People started talking about these as being mere statutory interests instead of underlying fundamental constitutional principles. That's one problem. And that was a problem from day one. As well, in many states, the legislatures codified such broad exceptions that they were, in a sense, useless from the outset, the most horrific of which exists in about 40 states, believe it or not, the exception that says prior sexual behavior is not relevant except with the accused, which in a sense says to all married women and people in relationships, don't even bother reporting the rape because we're going to use your sex life with this man who raped you against you. And that's ridiculous. And the third problem is what's reflected in the Kobe Bryant case, which is the most harmful misuse of Rape Shield laws I have ever seen. Because what Rape Shield laws did to give effect to the purpose was they made it a requirement, a procedural requirement, that defense attorneys seek permission from the judge outside of the presence of the jury before asking that bombshell question about a woman's sexual past, because you can't unring the bell once the question is asked.
Isn't that what's going on right now in Colorado?
Yes, but here's what's interesting and really cruelly ironic. The statute that says, defense attorney, you have to seek permission first. We're going to require you to bear the burden of proof. If you can make a showing that someone's sex life is fair game, fine, but it's your burden. You have to seek permission first away from the jury, and then the judge will decide one way or the other. Well, that provision for a hearing during which the defense is supposed to make its showing has been transformed in the Kobe Bryant case into a vehicle through which the victim is being subjected to an interrogation for the purpose of uncovering information about which the defense doesn't know, shouldn't know, and in a sense they're using the Shield Law as a tool of discovery to get at the very information the law was designed to protect against. It is an absolute inversion of the purpose.
Well, Wendy Murphy, you put a lot on the table there. Larry Posner, we've just got half a minute before the break, and we'll hear more from you. But do you see an erosion of the Shield Law going on in Colorado right now, or just aggressive defense of Kobe Bryant, or both?
No. This is frankly so far off base, and the listening public is getting such a wrong idea about what is occurring. The Rape Shield Law deserves to be in existence. This notion that judges were always letting history in is incorrect, and at the heart of this, the Shield Law has been absolutely obeyed in Colorado. Now, we can talk about it after the break, but I have to say this is complete fiction, the story that Wendy is giving the audience.
So you're seeing justice rolling ahead. Wendy Murphy is worried something else is going on. Listeners, we are talking tonight about Rape Shield laws, women's privacy, and the Kobe Bryant case. Are you following this case? Can Kobe Bryant and other accused rapists get a fair trial without access to an accuser's sexual history? Is an accuser's sexual history ever relevant? When? We're 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about rape shield laws, about women's privacy, and the Kobe Bryant case going on in Colorado. Are you following that case, the Kobe Bryant case, the basketball superstar? Is the rape shield holding up? And has America found the right balance of fairness for women and justice for men? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. My guests tonight, Wendy Murphy, adjunct professor at the New England School of Law, a former prosecutor of sex crimes. And joining us from Denver, Colorado, Larry Posner, a Denver defense attorney, former president of the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. So, Larry, there's a lot of information that's in the public domain at this point. I don't know if it's an allegation or the notion that this accuser had sex not long before the encounter with Kobe Bryant, that she had it not long after the encounter with Kobe Bryant. There's been testimony going on in the last 2 days from her, from ex-boyfriends and others. There's the concern raised, and you've heard it here tonight rather dramatically, that the rape shield law is breaking down here. You say not. Why not? How do you interpret what's happening?
Let's step back and see what brings us here. The rights in question are not the rights of men versus the rights of women. There's a much broader question, which is the rights of an accuser versus the rights of a criminally accused. And so we start with a constitution that protects a person and says, if you are ever accused of a crime in America, you are allowed to plead not guilty. You are allowed to confront and cross-examine your accuser, and you're allowed to defend yourself, even if it may prove embarrassing or painful to another witness. What system would we have if we said, in sex assault cases, once an allegation is made, the man may plead not guilty if he wishes, but may not defend himself?
But didn't the rape shield laws enacted 3 decades ago now, Larry, acknowledge that there had been a history of women being kind of dragged through a cross-examination that sullied them before a jury, even before they got to the facts of the allegation of rape?
I've only practiced for 3 decades, for 30 years. So in my lifetime, that did not occur. Could it have occurred at some point in American history? Undoubtedly.
But those laws were passed for some reason, presumably.
But let's accept the law, Tom. What the law says, mm-hmm. and what the judge has done and the defense has done is live up to that law. What the law says is, first, this notion that her entire sexual history can be gone into, absolutely false. The notion that she was asked on the witness stand about her entire sexual history, absolutely false.
You mean even yesterday, even this week in these closed hearings?
No, Tom, that wasn't permitted. Mm-hmm. Here's what happens under a rape shield law. The defense cannot say, hey, judge, I'd like to have a hearing and ask private questions about her sex life. You're not allowed to do that. Under a rape shield law in Colorado and in every state, the defense must file a sworn affidavit that says, judge, I already have the following facts. They are relevant in this particular case. The judge reads the affidavit. If he says, A, you don't have facts, no hearing, or B, although you have facts, they're simply not relevant to this case, no hearing. But if they are factual and relevant, the judge grants a hearing. And what kind of hearing does the judge grant in Colorado and elsewhere under a rape shield law? As private a hearing as the law allows. The only people in the room are the witnesses, the judge, the defendant, and the lawyers. The public isn't allowed in. Now, it happens in this case that there are 100 satellite trucks outside. Mm-hmm. We can't do anything about that. That happens. But I can assure you that's only one rape shield hearing out of hundreds and hundreds held annually.
And just procedurally, the judge will then decide what of everything that's heard in this closed hearing would appropriately go to the trial when the trial commences. Is that right?
That's exactly right, Tom. And Wendy is right about several things that the rape shield law does protect. You can't unring the bell. And as a result, the rape shield statute says, judge, why don't you hear the questions and the answers, the facts, in private so that you can say to a defense lawyer, all right, the following things you're not to ask ever again. They're off the table. The following things you may ask. This is the only sensible way to protect a defendant's right to a fair trial while protecting the privacy of an accuser. And that's all that's happening.
Wendy Murphy, I hear you there.
Yeah, there are a lot of things that I think need to be corrected. Look, there's no question Kobe Bryant is entitled to a fair trial. It's one of the most important rights. I don't ever want to see the Bill of Rights affected by any of the work that I do. I care deeply about them. This is the issue. In a criminal case, a defendant does not have a constitutional right to conduct pretrial discovery from a private person. They do in civil lawsuits because it would be each individual against the other, and they would have equal rights to get stuff from each other, and that's a different kind of case. This is a criminal case. Kobe Bryant's opponent is the government. The victim is not an agent of the government. The victim is a private citizen. Because Kobe Bryant doesn't have constitutional rights in the abstract, because they only exist when they bump up against the state, when he tries to exercise them against a private person, they don't exist. So for Larry to suggest that Kobe Bryant has a constitutional right to confront his accuser, he's right. But that's a trial right. It does not exist in this very early stage. Moreover, to the extent it's fair to ask this victim a question for the purpose of clarifying whether her injuries were caused by somebody other than Kobe Bryant, because it has been revealed and everybody agrees she had consensual sex 2 days before the incident.
Not with Kobe Bryant, entirely separate.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. And if somebody wants to make the claim and Kobe Bryant's lawyers are this is fair for them to raise this issue. If they want to say, we want to know whether those injuries existed before Kobe Bryant had contact with her, it's absolutely fair for the judge to say, let's ask the victim whether she had pre-existing injuries.
So what's your complaint then? When does it pass from reasonable to discovery, which is you're saying is not reasonable?
No, because the time when that is supposed to happen under the rape shield laws in this country, and having been a prosecutor, I can tell you this is the only time it ever happened with me, is in the middle of trial or maybe on the eve of trial. And I will even go so far as to say, if it needs to be a larger series of questions, maybe you can do it a few weeks before. That's what the Colorado law says, 30 days in advance, because it is part of the trial process when Kobe has rights. But look.
But what does the time factor matter? What if it's 6 months before? What does that matter?
Here's why it matters. Because, number one, this makes it crystal clear that it is not about his trial rights, and it pretends that he has some kind of right to interrogate a private person, and he doesn't, number one. Number two, the scope of this inquiry was not as limited as I just suggested it should be. They were allowed to ask her questions. This has been reported about her sex life for the 2 year period prior to the night in question. How does that possibly go to the injuries? Now, if somebody wants to argue that it might have something to do with some other theory, that's fine. It's still a process of uncovering private information in violation of a statute that's designed to protect against exactly this. This is an interrogation by the coercive power of the state intruding into a woman's constitutionally protected privacy at the behest of a person who has no constitutional authority at this early stage.
Wendy Mifford, we've got the perspective. Larry Posner, why the two-year history here?
And remember, as we're going to discuss, Tom, it's not tell me who you've slept with for 2 years. That is completely wrong. Let us set up for the audience what really happened in this particular case.
Please.
Her sexual history would not have been an issue, and a sexual history of a woman is ordinarily not an issue in a sex assault case, and the law presumes it's not an issue. What happened in this case is the prosecution chose to endorse a nurse, and undoubtedly other experts now, to say this woman had bleeding, and that bleeding from some minute cuts was caused, in our expert opinion, by A, non-consensual intercourse only, and B, it had to be Kobe Bryant. And so the prosecution said, we want to go forward and use this injury against Kobe to convict Kobe. What happened in response to that was a quick survey of the medical literature shows that this kind of injury happens through consensual sex, just as it can happen through non-consensual sex. It can happen more often with certain women who have a thinner membrane, and it can happen from repeated sexual episodes in a short period of time.
So the defense came back and challenged the picture that was being painted by the prosecution.
They, And it's exactly right, Tom. And what people are losing sight of is it's the prosecution that made all of this necessary. And what the prosecution is arguing, and what I hear Wendy arguing, frankly, is the prosecution should be allowed to put their theory in front of the jury, and the defense should not be allowed to rebut it. But that makes no sense, and that wouldn't be how we do trials in America.
That's not fair, because what I'm really saying is that it's totally fair for somebody in Kobe Bryant's position to want to know whether this woman had a pre-existing vaginal injury. That's
right.
Fair.
Mm-hmm.
What's not fair is for someone like Pamela Mackey to speculate. Speculate is the key word here.
About some
mystical theory of defense that has no place in logic or science, and to use that as a reason to cause a court to subject an innocent person who's done nothing wrong to an inquiry about her constitutionally protected privacy rights for 2 years prior to the night in question.
Larry Posner, why the two-year survey?
Sure. It's not tell me where you've been for 2 years, but remember, Tom, at the heart of this, the defense has filed a sworn affidavit that has convinced the judge they already have enough facts to show the relevancy, not that they're shopping for them. And what would those facts be? What would this case look like if she said, I bled, and the expert said it had to be non-consensual, it had to be Kobe, and the defense called one of her former boyfriends, a boyfriend of, let's say, 2 years ago, and he says, look, she's a very nice person, we had a very nice relationship, it was all consensual, but I have to tell you, we would have consensual sex, and she would bleed from this very location. Well, wouldn't that be relevant to the defense of Kobe Bryant when the prosecution is saying, oh, no, it had to be Kobe, and it had to be non-consensual? So it's not the date that matters,
that
whether
absurd.
It was a year or two ago. It's not absurd.
You know what,
Wendy Murphy, what do you say?
Larry Posner has just embraced a rule of law that not only would encourage rapists to be super brutal when they commit their crimes, because if you're going to get around the rape shield law, you want to make sure you injure the woman so that you can explore her sexual history to find out whether she's ever been injured before as the ostensible reason why you're trying to torture her and violate her privacy rights. The point is, it is irrelevant whether she likes kinky sex, boring sex, or no sex at all. And the Colorado Supreme Court has already ruled in a case exactly like this, where a woman was raped, she suffered vaginal abrasions. This was a decision only in 2 years ago, 2002.
The Harris
woman's
case.
Raped, Harris case. 2002, she suffered vaginal abrasions. She told police she had had sex 3 days earlier. Why she told them that, I don't know. I wish she had known that she didn't have to say that. And in response, the defense says, we want the jury to hear that she had sex because maybe, hear the speculation in my voice, maybe that caused the abrasion. The Colorado Supreme Court said, you're not going to do it. Number one, this would open up a Pandora's box for any sexually active woman. Forget the prosecutability of prostitute rape cases. You're not going to do it. You know why? Because that guy, Harris, in that case, and Kobe Bryant in this case, are free to argue to the jury that consensual sex can cause vaginal injuries. If the jury wants to believe it and they can put on an expert to say so, then maybe he'll be acquitted. But you don't make a mess of things and distort the truth-finding function by adding personal, irrelevant sexual details. It's not fair. It doesn't elucidate the truth. It distorts it.
Wendy Murphy, Larry Posner, please stand by. Callers want to join this conversation. I want to invite them in. There's much more we want to hear from you as well. Alex is calling from Erie, Pennsylvania. Hi, Alex. You're on the air.
Hi. Can you hear me okay?
Loud and clear, Alex. Yeah.
Excellent. I just want to make the point about something about defending and protecting people and you know, the innocence and the accused has a right to defend themselves. I'm not a big fan of Kobe. I mean, I really don't like the guy much at all, and I didn't, you know, have any support in him in any way before this happened. But it seems like one of the things that is completely absurd in this entire process is we can completely destroy somebody on the side who is being accused of this. And, you know, most of the Constitution is protecting the people, you know, who have been accused of crimes. And this guy can be raped over the coals, torn to shreds by the media left and right. And what if he's innocent this entire time? I don't know. I'm not going to speculate. But if he is totally innocent the entire time, his entire career is already shot. There are people in America that can't stand the guy and will never like the guy just because of the accusation.
But Alex, what about the alleged victim here? She's had hundreds of death threats. She's had three men gone to jail for death threats. She's had to move to four different states. Isn't that a kind of raking over the coals, too?
Absolutely, and I couldn't agree with you more that I think the Rape Shield Law should absolutely be, you know, strengthened and supported, and maybe the media needs to have a little bit more control. I'd like to be talking about, you know, person X and person Y here instead of using people's names.
Well, we're not using hers, and Kobe, of course, is publicly accused, so that's just out of the barn.
Oh, no, I know we can't go back in time and fix it. I think that the Rape Shield Law should be more protective for the people who are in this situation because I want justice. I think most men in this country want to see justice in this case also. But at the same time, you don't want to create a judicial system that can prejudge someone so badly that it can ruin their life. I mean,
Alex, we've got it loud and clear, and I'll get Larry's view on that. But, Wendy, to you first, what about the accused? What about, in this case, Kobe Bryant? You hear the caller saying...
Yeah.
Don't leave him hanging out there. Don't have his career wrecked if maybe he didn't do this.
You know, look, there's no question about it. When people are formally accused of crime, it's serious. It affects their lives. But I think we forget that this is not a case that is brought by a woman. It is brought by the state. She reported a crime, which we want people to do if
sure.
we want to have a safe society and a justice system that works. We want the system not to beat them up because we need them to continue to participate. And we want Kobe Bryant and everyone charged with crime to have a fair trial. Which means giving them every opportunity to introduce relevant evidence in the case, and that's a key phrase here. I think what we have to keep in mind is that because he's been formally charged, that means that the police investigated it. We know that the DA and the police have lots of experience in these cases, that they met for a long period of time over the course of many days.
So you're saying they saw merit in the case.
They can't ethically go forward with a prosecution unless they believe in good faith they can prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. We can't give no value to that. They vet cases and it has value. Look, the presumption of innocence is extremely important, but I live in the real world. And if somebody indicted but not yet convicted of child rape moved in across the street, should I send my kids over for milk and cookies because of the presumption of innocence?
Larry Posner, yeah,
should you give them a fair trial, Wendy?
Absolutely,
are you
Larry.
Saying you hate them well,
no,
so
I
much that
him,
men should not get a fair trial in sex assault?
That's not what I said.
Well, what about Kobe Bryant in this case, Larry? We've talked about the accuser.
This?
What about Kobe Bryant? Has he had a fair shake so far here by your standards, by your scale?
He filed what the law said he's to file. A judge who is extremely experienced and who is, by the way, a former career prosecutor, read the affidavit and said, wait a minute, the facts before me appear to be relevant to this case. I must hold a private hearing. What is wrong with this? And what is the solution that the males shall not defend themselves if the questioning is embarrassing?
You know, can
is
I just
that
say,
the standard
say,
in America?
Can I just say one
very
quick
quickly,
thing?
Wendy,
that,
yeah.
Because I think what's important to remember about the potential harm of rape shield laws and how it's harmful here is that if Kobe Bryant had beaten her or stolen her money or something like that, this hearing would never be taking place. She would not be subjected to any kind of interrogation because we don't have larceny victim shield laws because they don't need them because they don't have a history of being abused in the criminal justice.
It would all be
system.
In the trial you're saying. Wendy Murphy, Larry Posner, please stand by. We'll be right back. We're talking tonight about rape shield laws, women's privacy, and the Kobe Bryant case. Is an accuser's sexual history ever relevant? Can Kobe Bryant and other accused rapists get a fair trial without access to an accuser's sexual history? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are talking tonight about rape shield laws, about women's privacy, and the Kobe Bryant case. You can join the conversation. Is the rape shield holding up? If Kobe Bryant's sexual history, a defendant's sexual history, is fair game, why not the accuser's? On the other hand, will even fewer women come forward if they suspect that years of their sexual history will be scrutinized in a rape trial or pretrial? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm joined tonight from Denver, Colorado, by Larry Posner. He's a Denver defense attorney, former president of the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. From Boston, by Wendy Murphy, adjunct professor at the New England School of Law, a former prosecutor of sex crimes. And now from Boston, by Karen Brohard. She's a lecturer in psychology at Harvard Medical School. She's co-director of the Center for Violence Prevention and Recovery at the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston. And Karen Brohard, thanks for joining us. I guess that is a kind of rape crisis center that you co-direct.
It is. We work with survivors of all sorts of interpersonal violence, but a main component is working with rape survivors.
Karen, I don't know if you followed the case in Colorado or our conversation here this evening, but when you hear what's coming out of this particular trial, very high profile because of Kobe Bryant's celebrity status, how do you read it in terms of what you, how you see women responding day in and day out to the trauma of rape.
Well, let me say, I'm really first glad that you are creating a forum for this discussion, because I think this case reveals a great deal about where we are and how our society views these issues. And we talk a lot about the presumption of innocence, but I see so much more evidence of presumption of lying on the part of the victim. I mean, Kobe Bryant's not getting death threats, and the victim is being vilified in the media, on the internet, all over the place. And I think that there's a much stronger assumption that women are going to make false accusations against men.
Do you see women acting on? I'm reading here that something like 80% of women who have been raped do not report it to law enforcement authorities. Do trials like this affect the way women handle rapes when they've happened?
Absolutely. And in fact, the statistic I've seen most is about 86% do not report. And in the 100 survivors that we work with per year, probably fewer than 5%.
And why is that exactly? Is it personal or is it part of this public problem?
Well, it's both. When you think about the experience of rape, which is the most humiliating, degrading experience I can imagine, having to tell that story to one person, the nurse in the emergency room, is in and of itself awful and brings up all of those feelings and the horror and disgust and terror. And it's hard. And then to think about having to tell that to a police officer who may respond with a question like, so your boyfriend was in the next room but you didn't scream?
And yet the accused has to have a right to defend himself here.
Absolutely. But I think if you look at the balance here of justice and fairness and rights of the accused versus the accuser, I think it's skewed in the other direction. The fact is that fewer than 4% of rapists are ever convicted. And so we are leaving a whole crew of sex offenders out there who are, many of them reoffending, over half of them reoffend and offend also not just with other adults, but with children, or they are physically battering their spouses or their children. So we're really leaving a lot of license for very dangerous people to be walking around in our society.
Larry Posner, Karen Brahad runs a rape crisis center, but I hear you kind of muttering objections there.
I am muttering. Rape is very real, and it is assault of conduct, and where it is proven, it needs to be sternly punished. Nobody debates that. But I cannot debate these mumbo-jumbo numbers. Let us assume that only 4% of the people report. Let us assume that every woman who says she is the victim is telling the truth. I'm not able to do that. I really believe that in every situation in life, there may be people who are not being honest with us.
Well, possibly, but Karen runs a rape crisis center. She says they see about 100 women a year coming in, and that only, this is direct experience, maybe 5% of them go ahead with the charges.
Maybe 5%, according to her, go ahead with charges, but what she wants to say is, but let me assume that all of the other 95 were raped.
Well, I didn't hear
and
all.
And therefore there are, well, then how are we going to do it, Tom, if we don't do it with trials? There is nothing left if you get rid of the American justice system.
No one's saying get rid of the trial. It's just concern about will the woman feel.
Then what are we saying, Tom? Get rid of a fair trial? Is that the solution?
No, not that either. I think the rape shield was put in place to protect a woman's entire sexual history from being pulled in, whether or not it's relevant. Isn't that it?
It was relevant. If it's relevant, it has to be admissible. Listen to what the opposite rule will be. Evidence that is relevant to the guilt or innocence of the accused is admissible in first-degree murder to shoplifting, except in sexual cases in which evidence relevant to the defense of the accused shall not be admissible.
Can I have a
wonderful rape shield law.
Wendy Murphy, I hear you there.
I want to correct something. What's funny about the rape shield law is they all provide for the defense to get around it as long as it's constitutionally necessary and as long as the defense can show a legitimate relevancy, it absolutely does get in, as
but
it should.
But the judge found that here.
Look, the judge hasn't made that finding yet. The judge has made some preliminary finding. It remains to be seen. And I suspect the victim in that hearing said, I had no pre-existing vaginal injuries, which is why we will not hear anything about her sex life.
That's fine. Then the law
trial
worked.
But, Larry, you're not hearing what Karen was saying, which is that women don't report report, and you have to acknowledge it's a large social problem. The top two reasons given, and this is cited in the Rape in America study, Senator Biden has cited this data before Congress, the top two reasons given why women don't report the crime of rape is fear of being blamed and fear of being shamed. And guess what? Larceny victims, robbery victims, carjacking victims don't fear those things. They report all the time. Nobody blinks an eye when they get their car stolen,
please,
before they call the police or agree to testify. But our criminal justice system is punitive to women who report rape, and that is unjust. That is un-American.
Wendy, Larry, I hear that. We've got a lot of callers who want to join us, and I want to get to them. Karen Brohard, I want to thank you for bringing a kind of street-level perspective here. Thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Okay.
Karen Brohard, co-director of the Center for Violence Prevention and Recovery at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston. Brian is calling from Cumberland, Rhode Island. Hi, Brian. You're on the air.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I just wanted to say that rape and consensual sex are completely different things, and an accuser's sexual history has no more relevance than my philanthropic history would be if I were to bring a robbery charge against somebody.
Well, can you imagine any circumstance where it might be relevant?
I just think that they're completely different things. I mean, I think that's much like Wendy had said, is that if there's some constitutional reason to bring evidence, that's the burden of the defense.
Well,
they can still bring it.
That's why we have the hearing.
But this issue of going back 2 years, I mean, it just seems ludicrous and unsupportable.
And you're saying let's just keep it out. On the other hand, if you were the accused, and it looked to you like your attorneys were saying, "Gosh, there's something we need to follow up on here because relevant."
False charges of robbery too, but that's what the trial is set to decide. But the thing is, if I bring false charges against somebody for robbery, if I say somebody mugged me on the street and they didn't, they're not going to ask, "Well, you know, how much have I given to panhandlers before?"
Brian, we've got it, and thank you very much for your call. Larry, you can feel the resistance here. On the other hand, people want justice for an accused.
Well, you cannot get to justice unless you have a fair trial. There is no other definition of justice but a fair procedure. The defense is following the procedure. The judge is following the procedure. If you want to be brutally honest, what has happened in this case that is so different than most cases is the accuser has laid before the defense a smorgasbord of evidence that may be admissible. It's just that there is so much more in her background that may be relevant.
So you're saying the prosecution is actually messed up here in tactical terms?
Well, but let me take it a step deeper, Tom, so that you can see also what's going on. We say in America that if a witness takes the stand, you may always cross-examine them on their motive, interest, and bias. Are you a friend of the victim? Are you a friend of the accuser? Have you dated the accuser? In this case, the defense is saying we have reason to believe, we have evidence that witnesses in this case have lied about their relationship with her. Well, that would be admissible in a theft case or in a burglary case, and it's going to be admissible here. But if the lie is about a sexual relationship, the only way you can tell the jury what the lie is to show the sexual relationship. That's just the way it's always been done in America. It's not about the sex per se, it is about the credibility of a witness. So that evidence may well come in at trial.
Wendy Murphy?
You know, I don't want to laugh, but I mean, of course you can bring out a lie without bringing out the sex. That's absurd. You can ask appropriate questions about motive and bias and so on without going into the dirty details, and Larry knows that. And I don't know what he's alluding to, but I suspect that if he thinks one of the witnesses is involved with the victim, I think that's fair game. I think the jury should know whether a person is in love with another person because that might make them change their testimony. You know, Tom, you asked one important question, though. I think this is one of the myths that we should address. That you said, look, Kobe Bryant's prior assaultive sexual history might have been fair game if it ever came out that he assaulted other women in the past, and there have been suggestions of that. I don't know if they're true. Then how come that's fair, but her consensual sexual past isn't? And I just want to make this very simple point because it is absolutely fair to have what looks like a disparity because The law is designed to control human behavior,
right,
to encourage good behavior, discourage bad behavior. Therefore, if you go around sexually assaulting people, you should always fear that if you get caught and you get caught again and again, we're going to use it against you. That's how we deter you from doing it again. If you engage in consensual, autonomous, free, lawful sexual behavior,
the law's not concerned.
We don't want to punish you. We want to encourage you. That's part of what it means to be a free human being. That's not a disparity. That's the correct way to be.
I want to get one more call in here. Robert's calling from Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Hi, Robert. You're on the air.
Hello.
Good evening.
Yes, I think most of the points have already been made and some of the turf has already been trampled, but I think I probably, if I was sitting on a jury and the boyfriend was in the next room and somebody didn't scream, I would want to know that. I definitely would want to know that. Why wouldn't I want to know that? And if her injuries are only internal and vaginal, and we've got a nurse, qualified or not, 4 years of college roughly, however much of that's just memorization courses and punching a ticket or the sheepskin is up to you.
Your point, Robert, yeah.
Yeah, and the point is that we surely can't prosecute on just a woman saying she's been raped, and there's... We always know that this is men against women. It's proportionally men against women.
Of course, yeah.
If we accept that right up front, then we're going to have to talk about these people's sex life. It shouldn't be that embarrassing anyway. We're talking about a sex incident. Both sides can talk about it, and then the jury can sit down and decide, is she the type of woman that likes sex rough? Is she the type of woman that seeks out these
people? Well, but you know how easily manipulable that is if you get into characterizing what she likes. I mean, that gets pretty wild and woolly in a hurry, but we've got your perspective, Robert, and thank you for your call. Larry, quickly here, you're suggesting that there's a relationship that needs investigation. Is this a matter of public record in this particular trial?
I think motions have been filed by the defense that indicate that they believe witnesses have lied or deceived the sheriff's department about their relationship with the accuser. And if that is true in any trial in America, the defense would be allowed to show it. You don't have a license to lie.
Well,
any case.
But Larry, look, let's talk about who we know lied in this case, and that's Kobe Bryant. He first said he didn't know her from a hole in the wall, and then he said he had sex with her. That's for sure a lie in this case that is crucial and relevant.
Do you think the prosecution should be allowed to use that?
Yes, and I'm saying...
Well, then why shouldn't he be allowed to use the lies he discovers?
I'm not saying you're wrong about people who lie who are witnesses in cases. I'm not disagreeing with you on that point. I'm just saying credibility is important, but Kobe lied. That matters, and no one wants to talk about that because we're too busy talking about the fact that the woman wore stretchy yellow knit underwear and had sex two days earlier.
Wendy, Larry, I want to step back. We've just got 1 minute left. Wendy, I want to put this question to you. Here we are 30 years on from the implementation, the drawing up of most of these laws. Are they working in general? You may have complaints about the Kobe Bryant case, but is the Rape Shield working nationally?
I think the answer to that question is sometimes and in some states. There are some states that do a very good job, that do put the defendants to their burden, that don't allow these kind of probing interrogation hearings before the fact. And unfortunately, for women who don't live in those states, those women are getting a better shake at justice. I think one of the big problems here is that when women went en masse to the legislatures to get these laws passed, mm-hmm. they cared a lot, and then they lacked voice in the criminal justice system to ensure enforcement and accountability. It's the lack of voice for women in the criminal justice system that has caused the problem.
Well, we will keep an eye on this. I appreciate both of you being so forthright with your arguments and with your views. Wendy Murphy, thank you very much for joining
us
tonight. Wendy Murphy, adjunct professor at the New England School of Law, and Larry Posner in Denver, thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks to you, and thanks to you, Wendy. Good night, Tom.
Good night. Larry Posner, defense attorney in Denver, Colorado, former president of the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. You can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.